Okay, so I'll start this up now. And here we are on Sunday, May 16th, right?
2 o'clock p.m.
2 p.m. with Margaret
day.
Briegman and James Brown. And we're gonna head, we're just outside 401 Richmond. We're just gonna head to Spadina and south from there.
We get to the corner, I could say a couple things just about this area here.
Sure.
I think one of the things that I like most about Spadina is that it takes us through some of the best neighborhoods of Toronto. So starting at Bloor, it takes us through University of Toronto, then further south, Chinatown, and here we are in the Fashion District and sort of on the fringe of the Entertainment District. And so to me, it really, no matter what the street looks like, if we do, you know, we haven't even started talking about that yet, it really does take us through some of the best parts of the city.
I was going to say also that Richmond and Spadina is the sort of heart of the former garment industry. That's where all the workshops, the sweatshops are all located. And consequently, the building stock here tend to be a lot of sort of higher multi-story buildings, which are, you know, in some ways against the sort of Toronto, early built form was never this high, so these are quite high buildings, and they've attracted a lot of artists, different design firms in them, and they're actually the model for the rebuilding further south of Richmond, Adelaide, and at the same time, the street really had a makeover, so it was all new transit put into it, the sidewalks are widened, new trees, etc., so it's, you know, the expectation is that this street, which, by the way, connects you to the lake, has a certain kind of, you know, responsibility, let's just say, in terms of creating a better public domain. And Toronto is a unique place, but they want to have good examples of city building. We don't have that many good examples of building streets and buildings along with it. So on the way down, we're going to examine those buildings, those public spaces, and see if they kind of live up to that expectation.
Good.
Yeah.
And we're on the sunny side, which is nice.
Let me just make sure that's still going. Okay, that's good.
Okay.
I always have to double check. Okay, so heading south on Spadina now.
One of the great things about Spadina, of course, is the dedicated streetcar right-of-way. It's a good example of a streetcar right-of-way that works, and it's used as an example for that, you know, by people that even live outside of the city. It works well. It works well because Spadina has a 40-meter right-of-way. And what that means is from property line to property line, there's about 40 meters. So within that, you can do quite a lot. There's very wide sidewalks. There's, like I said, the streetcar right-of-way. There's two travel lanes in each direction. In some parts, there's even parking. Here, there's no parking at the curb. But even in this section, between Richmond and Adelaide, there's some bicycle racks and a lot of street furniture, trees. You don't get an opportunity to do that with a streetcar right-of-way in other parts of the city where it's being sort of tested and tried.
This is, as I was saying earlier, this is one of the sort of bookmarker buildings, the Balfour building.
So it goes
at 119 Spadina.
But it's pretty spectacular. You know, it sort of conjures up big city. When you look at it, Toronto in its early days really never had these kind of skyscraper buildings. This sort of thing is usually imported as an idea from New York or whatever. But we never really got the height. We got the base, we got the middle, but we never got the top. But there are a few examples where you really had buildings that could match the scale of the street, as you're saying. You know, 120 feet is pretty wide. The other issue with streets like this is everyone should get what they want. You know, cyclists should get what they want, the pedestrians. And when you have dimension and scale, you can plant a line of trees down the middle so you can choose to walk on this side or that side. Choice is everything, you know, and Toronto's streets are very narrow. They're all British. British imposed a 66 right-of-way, which is sort of like 15 chains or something like this in the British kind of metric system they use. So our streets aren't wide at all. But this is unique because it has at one end, it has a beautiful roundabout, and the other end, it has the lake, you know, which is pretty phenomenal when you think about streets, what they do. You know, just take that street and then walk, you know. So
think it was Michael McClellan was saying this was originally planned as a sort of an axial view to the lake for one of the founding families.
Right.
Yeah.
The, what is it, the Baron?
Baldwin.
Baldwin.
Baldwin. Yeah.
In the 1800s.
And you see, these are all laid out by the military. These are park lots, which are divided up as long, long ownership routes. So all our north-south streets connect this way, and they're intercepted by east-west streets, which are zigzag, you know, and they interfere with this north-south system, generally speaking. So Toronto is not a city of grid, perfect grid. It's a city of exceptions. You know, streets that meet and stagger when they hit Spadina, they don't all necessarily go right through. So,
so these north-south arteries have a history with military routes from fort to fort and this kind of thing?
Well, they were laid out for the elite. The elite families bought these as park lots. Park lots were extensions from the old city, and as they moved west, these park lots were big stretches of land which were basically allowed... each of the owners that were developed them individually, you see. So you could, you know, right. put a couple streets in your park lot, but as the city grew, it absorbed these things and it produced all these exceptional kind of conditions, you know. You can see the pattern everywhere.
Okay. Greg, let's keep going south.
Michael McClellan is in, he's in our office in Toronto, up on St. Mary's Street.
Yeah?
We're on the same floor.
Earlier in the century, and I don't know, maybe in the mid-century to create a Spadina Expressway that would.
That's right. That was very controversial.
Extend up north out of the city, right, and then connect.
Right, and there was quite a lot of opposition to it, and you know, I think it turned out okay because the street really still does. Like I said before, it's such an important street in Toronto that it didn't sort of turn out to be the expressway, but it developed its own character and in a way became the pioneer street in Toronto, like I said before, for the streetcar right-of-way. So it's got its own significance now, but that was a very controversial proposal, sort of bringing the expressway right into downtown.
The other thing about Spadina is that the history of it is a district, and Spadina is the sort of symbol of the district. In the 60s and 70s, they tore a lot of buildings down here, a lot of empty voids all around it. And, I mean, as much as that was a negative thing, it also meant that you could actually build there. And that's what's happened here in the last 10 or 15 years. The whole series of the condominiums, infill buildings, renovations that have taken place. So cities are like that. They need to need voids in order to build in them.
This area at King and Spadina has actually been revitalized in the last, say, 5 or 10 years. There's quite a lot of new development mixed in with the older buildings, and it seems to work. It's got a really good neighborhood feel now.
Well, you can see also, we're at now King and Spadina. You can see there's a kind of break. You know, the pattern of building changes from low buildings to bigger buildings. And it's funny, you can see them at the intersections, just how those things change. So when we move south, see how this starts to transform into something of a whole different pattern. Cities are normally about infill, you know, and accretion. A lot of these areas are all new buildings that put in. So.
Yeah, and as we walk further south into this area, you notice that the pavement gets even wider, 3 lanes in each direction and plus turn lanes. There's
the sidewalks get narrower.
The sidewalks definitely get narrower. We're walking closer to the buildings. And the closer we get to the Gardiner and Lakeshore, the more that sort of makes sense. But
right. So have we gone from 2 lanes to 3 lanes now? Or?
From two lanes in each direction to 3 lanes. Yeah, and like I said before, the pavement width varies on Spadina. There's parking accommodated at the curb in some sections. But here, even on the sidewalk, it's less crowded than you would find up in Chinatown. It's there's not as much retail. There's more office building type of development. And then a gas station.
You were telling me before also that when you widen a street, you're also encouraging more speed.
That's one of the effects. In an urban environment, that's not necessarily true because there are traffic signals every 200 meters or so. So you can only go so fast. That effect really is true in neighborhoods or in suburbia, but. It's not to say people don't go fast on Spadina, but because there's signals every 200 meters or so, or sometimes even less than 200 meters, that really slows people down.
Let's take a look at this. I'll show you something interesting.
So we're now at Clarence Square Park.
This is a historic park square along with Victoria Park further west from us, but. It's an interesting condition where these historic parks encounter Spadina. You can sort of see crossing six lanes plus a central medium is not an easy thing to do. These are recently been cut. You can see the kind of cuts in the raised ballast there.
Okay.
But it's impossible to kind of connect from this side to that side.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of small details that really make great cities. And this is a great little public space, but you know it's worn out. You know, it needs improvements. You look at the edges of it all have kind of road barriers for edges. That's not what you do in a public park. These are really, the lighting's bad, the seating's not very good. In spite of all that I'm saying, people love it. You know,
and the trees are beautiful. They're very, they're mature trees. And if you're looking for shade, this is the place to come.
we did some work on this and the other square. Yeah, because the military founded Toronto, more or less. They buried people in the park, so Victoria Square and here, there's a good chance there are bodies very close to the surface. So there's all kinds of archaeological stuff that needs to be done here. But this is quite charming as a public space off the street. You can imagine just how it works. You have a sidewalk and then you have a beautiful public space. The trees and the shade and the kind of temperature make this thing work. There's a lot of existing, there's a big parking lot to the east there, which should really be a building. Generally speaking, squares should have buildings on all sides of them and deal with, you know, these conditions. But this is a circumstantial decision. The path, those walkways, you have to be brave or crazy to run across there.
Right, and the cut is for the pedestrian crossing, which is signalized.
Yeah, you have a little button.
Yeah, and it's to connect one side of the street to the other.
This side, gas station on the other side, which is not romantic or smart. Design the cities.
Yeah, it's not exactly a pedestrian
corridor.
Corridor down that street, whatever that is.
Although what it does, connect Wellington from the other side of the park to the west side of Spadina.
And what's nice about this park, I kind of like, is the way the path seemed to have been formed by that. Necessity rather than really program.
I mean, it's good for a while, but after 30 years it isn't. You know, you should probably have good wide paths that could be asphalt or concrete. You know, when they put in all the money on Spadina, they didn't put any money in terms of connecting the park. You know, these are sensitive little systems that you need to fine-tune the edge between, you know, Spadina and the park. And it's not really well done, to be honest. But,
so what you were saying about the this kind of traffic
barricade.
Yeah, on the north side of the park. That's a bad, and on the east side.
Right.
Well, they're used for highway design, not parks.
And they're here for safety, but it's not pretty.
And it's a leftover because there's a bus that turns around here, but you know, those are big things when you look at a park because you should be able to access it from all sides, you know. And, it's just kind of hard-nosed kind of approach to something. In spite of all that, the park persists. You know, there's something beautiful about the trees and the landscape, which you have to be amazed by the kind of strength and, you know, what would you call it, the natural ecology of the park system. There are not many open spaces around here, a few. And this is like one of them. There's almost nobody in it. Right?
Yeah, and it's unlike most smaller parks in the city because there are so many trees. I don't see a lot of sort of a night lighting. So it's a different kind of urban park. Should we continue walking south?
Yeah. Just keep take a look at that thing every once in a while. Make sure, it's going.
Looks like we're okay.
See the little sidewalk around here? You see where you're walking, David?
Yes.
That's what we call a kind of burn strip. The sidewalk's not wide enough,
And the burn strip? Is that what you said?
Yeah, because you're walking there. Watch when this woman comes by, we got to shift over. And so you're using this. So the sidewalks are not wide enough for the pedestrians using it. So this worn-out zone, which is not grass, is a strip that's kind of sort of saying that this should be wider. Ideally, given the sound of Spadina, you a double-articulated sidewalk, you put the sidewalk on the other side. So as you're walking through, you can actually walk between the trees, not at the edge of the trees. You know what a double sidewalk is. So when it means if I'm walking over here, I'm in the park. You're not in the park, you're in the edge of the park. And there's a big distinction. So that's about choice and it's about using something. So if I'm walking along there, I can in my mind say I want to walk through the park. This is not an experience. This is sort of tantalizing, but you're not experiencing the park. You only get the raindrip edge of the trees. They act with something, you have to interact with them. You have to be engaging it. Sidewalks can be sort of overly formal and overly directed. So, as a pedestrian, it's hard to kind of say, I want to make my own path, but ideally you have to be able to do that.
Right. And we've been talking a lot about trees, but as we get closer and closer to front, we see the buck stops here. The trees get more and more sparse, and the section across the railway, as we approach it, of course, there's no room for that kind of stuff.
Well, the pedestrian
becomes more open.
Stop here, doesn't it?
Yeah. And here we go, walking over a little.
What the
piece.
Heck?
I don't even know what to call it, but it's not quite a sidewalk.
It's called a hump.
Do you have any thoughts about these markings on the...
I can tell you a little bit about
this. Great. Okay.
This was a detail somebody planned for a tree protection, And so that little water and wave-like kind of details echoed even in the big lights. You can see it there.
Well, we're looking at the base of a tree.
There's
a tree pit, right?
It's a tree pit that has a kind of removable precast concrete surround for them. And the problem with it, you can see, it's actually killing the trees because there's not enough oxygen or green for the tree. You could actually just take those things out, it would be much better. In Montreal, they don't have any detail. They mulch the trees, and they're much more happy. That's like an Alcatraz garden for me. That's a nasty kind of detail for a tree. Think about it. Again, in spite of that, these trees, you couldn't kill them with a bomb. They'll just survive in spite of all that, but it's not a pleasant detail. It's an over-design, it seems to me. And too much concrete in that case.
What do you think about this wave pattern that they've sort of described in it?
I think it's meaningless.
It's strange that they would carry that motif into the street lights, the top of the street lights.
Oh, yeah.
It may be cute, but when I was saying earlier, the whole idea is to get to the water,
right.
Is that the right gesture? Is that the right kind of symbol for it? It's too easy, too simple in my mind, but... in Paris.
That's what that makes me think of as well, Paris.
Paris.
Here we are at Front Street.
Right. I was going to say, what do you think about... This is a pedestrian crossing across the street. There's also a link to the streetcar line. So you see what the pedestrians have to do when they get out of off the streetcar. They have to move along this, around and cross the sidewalks. It's extremely convoluted passage. I would say very dangerous. And you're right in the middle of, six lanes of traffic.
What would it be? what would the alternative be to what's going on here?
Well, really, there's a few alternatives. In some parts of the world, there's underground crossings, but that means you need more room to do that. You need more room to put a staircase in and a sidewalk around it or a pedestrian area around it, and the same thing on the curbside. So there are different ways to handle it, but can't always be done.
Well, it's a balancing act. You know, streets are all about being conciliatory for everyone, you know. How can you make it work for pedestrians, for trees, for people?
For cyclists, motorists, for everybody.
Sometimes the equipment of the street takes over and has much more of a kind of control over the use of the space. This is, I would say, it's not very friendly for pedestrians in the middle of that, crossing that. It's a huge walk across there. You have 12 or 16 seconds to get across there. You got to be an extremely robust individual, you know, to go across there. If you're a mother with a child in a carriage, which is the thing now, you see, is all these new towers that we're looking for, we're seeing here, there's like a forest of them. I call them a forest of gestures. These are all new towers. They're all competing with each other architecturally, but there also means that there's all new people coming in here. So you have an infrastructure that's, I would say, still a little tough and not supportive enough for the new community and people living here. So we'll see what effect they have. But
right.
As you were saying, there's no trees. We're looking at a huge rise in the street going over an underpass, which is bringing all the railway lines into Toronto there. So it's a point of transition, and good cities know how to deal with that. So you actually make corners. Look at this side of it's, there's really not much going on here. The real development's on one side, so there's a kind of strange bias going on here.
There is, and I'd be curious to see if we did this in 5 years, what we would say about the corners as well, because I'm sure things will be changing. There's a surface parking lot on the northeast corner, and you mentioned the car dealership in the northwest corner. So if we did this in 5 years, what would this corner look like?
I see, it's a good question about streets. Streets have to deal with intersections. Intersections are kind of quality place. You know, New York, intersections where everything comes together, you know. This is the development we're seeing to the south here, which is a huge big parcel of land that's being developed by one owner. And it's less about making a street than it is kind of creating more density and creating more city, I guess.
Well, it's almost right, a city or a mini city or a neighborhood in itself when the development is that large. And it's about connecting that development to the rest of the city, to Spadina first, and then the rest of the city through Spadina.
Yeah, like if you look, I would ask you a question, but when you look, what is it that Spadina is that's carrying through here? What is that makes Spadina an entity, not just the buildings? Streets should have an identity on their own, a kind of character. It's, you can't see much character at this point. So maybe, as you say, 10 or 15 years, all these voids will fill up and we'll have a real city.
And why don't we continue south? Yeah. It's actually difficult to create a street character. I don't know if you agree, James, when you have an overpass over a railway, because those are so expensive to construct that there's so many limitations on how wide you can make it and how wide the sidewalks can be. And you know, is there any room for street furniture, and is there any money left over for street furniture
and
all that kind of stuff?
Well, could I say, this is a bridge and a street at the same time, but it looks like a highway. It doesn't look like a street or a bridge.
That's interesting.
Bridges have a whole distinct function. They either connect or they separate something. So the street, the bridge, and the kind of rise are a little confused about what they want to do.
So this is not a coincidence that we're now at the point where the original lakeshore was.
Well, wouldn't you celebrate that a little bit? Wouldn't there be a kind of esteem? Because you're right, this is the edge. This is almost the boundary where the old city and the former lake met.
The old shoreline.
The change that we see here even today. Apparently, Governor Simcoe in the late 1700s reserved the whole lakefront of Toronto for the old lakeshore for forested land and unpopulated land. And slowly over the years through the early 1800s, parcels were sold off gradually and the railway went in.
And then the infill started further south toward the lake. What I notice about this section is it even feels different. There's more wind here. We're a little bit higher up. We're on an incline. But just as we get closer to the lake, you feel like you're getting closer to the lake.
Let's
windier.
Just stop here. You know the problem with Lord Simcoe? He didn't stay here long enough, you know. His wife and him took off after about 5 years, you know. You got to not only have an idea, you have to put the idea into action. And you have to get feedback from that idea to see how well it's working. The British initiated a lot of things, but they just didn't follow through with a lot of that. I mean, where we're standing right now, we're on the bridge. You can see the railway corridor cutting underneath us. You can see, this is a new city, I guess, city of towers, but when you look towards the south, you really can't see the water yet. I can't. There's lines of cars, raised expressways.
Yeah, it's the Gardiner, really.
So you can't see the water.
But what's interesting, if we look at the Gardiner, not to interrupt you, James, but you don't see any cars on there today. Today, this weekend is sort of a special weekend the yearly cycle of Toronto. It's closed for maintenance until Monday morning. So as we walk further south, that will be a spooky sort of empty Gardiner. Lakeshore will likely be a little bit busier than normal, and this is not the typical that you would see on a Sunday afternoon.
But because Toronto was built on an incline, Lake Iroquois was the former lake here. It went all the way up to Davenport. So Davenport, that was the lake edge. And as you move south, you're going down an incline, and if you're at Spadina in College, you'd probably see the water. You'd be seeing over the line of the expressway there, blanking it out so you can see the Toronto Islands. But as you get up, you can't do that, you know. So any suspense you might have in the street is kind of gone, you know. Where's the lake? You know, show me the lake.
And yet,
oh, it's there.
You know what's interesting? Spadina is the only major arterial collector that hits the lake shore and connects with the lake. At Bathurst, Bathurst ends at a parking lot for the Island Airport. Another example, at Simcoe ends at Harbourfront Centre. Bay Street ends at the ferry docks. Yonge Street ends at the big ship, Captain John's, the restaurant. So Spadina is actually the only one where you can walk straight down, and the closer we get, the more we'll see that, especially once we go under the Gardiner, that you just connect straight into the lake.
I was going to say one last thing. I mean, to be fair, the community actually and the city councilors organized a number of competitions for pedestrian bridges. There's one that was being proposed over here that would link into that development, and it was actually quite an interesting exercise. We entered the competition and won, mind you. We had an anonymous name for our entry, but the idea of bridges is that they should connect things. They are the community organizers. You know, benches and chairs and furniture design are the quintessential elements. But in the city urban design, it's really the bridges. What do they do? They are not only infrastructure, they should be cultural infrastructure. You know, things which are not just marked as a, you know, anti-car device, but something that actually has much more interest in kind
a railing
of
that's
celebrating
not just a railing.
The city, you know.
Well, that's something I didn't really think about. this bridge that we're on until you mentioned it, it doesn't feel like a pedestrian bridge. It just feels like a passage for cars.
Yeah, it's not exciting. I mean, we can do better than that. I mean, you know, I think that they should mix up the, in all due respect, there are some really good engineer and transportation designers. I'm with one right now. But they need a mixed up whole group of other people to come and start thinking about that problem. This is the, I mean, look at how many times you cross this bridge. This is not Florence. This is not the Ponte Vecchio, you know. There's no experience here. It's just zero, you know, crossing it.
Yeah.
I think you have to make more out of these places. So railings, sidewalk surfaces, lighting. Florence, where I was just there about a month ago, everything's about the bridges. They're just beautiful. There's a story of a German general that was told to blow up the bridge, okay? He didn't. He said, no, I'm not doing that, right? I don't know what happened to him, but right now there's a little plaque and memorial on this bridge in Florence, which is quite spectacular, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like bridges because they're a place where you can see the east, you can see the west, you can see the entire city.
It's a lookout point.
There's the front of the city. And this is the new front over here. So those places are places where the public can actually see growth and expansion. You can see the city, you know, the old city, the new city, there it is, right?
You're right, James. And I guess what's important to remember is that a bridge has to be functional, but it also has to be meaningful and beautiful and you know.
We could do both.
We could do both. And it, and when the design is happening, that means having the engineers and the architects and the urban planners and everybody else working together, and the historians working together.
And that's what I think, you know, a great city is about, is about being able to do things, you know, on that level, organize yourself. So you work with this person, that person works with you. I mean, you know? Andiamo.
Should we walk?
Yeah, let's continue south. So just to go back to Lake Iroquois for a second, now that dried up 45,000 years ago or something, didn't
it? No, 12,000.
12,000?
Yeah.
Close enough.
The Ice Age, last Ice Age. But, you know, the facts of that are everywhere here. All the slant and slope, the bed of Lake Iroquois is all sand, right? We have a whole series of creeks that used to, or still have cut through that, which are lost rivers. We did a study of Garrison Creek further west from here, but all those creek systems are, leave a kind of trace of their presence in that bed of Lake Iroquois. It's a fact of the city, you know, that when you go down, you can see gravity's on your side. You're walking, makes for easy walking, you know. See, the beautiful view to our islands is, it's not given to us, at least not here on this street. Can I say something about these new towers, by the way? You know, this is a huge...
To the west, across the
there,
street.
I'll think of the name of them right now, but...
Fort York and Spadina.
But either, you know, do you build a solid wall to the street, or do you create gaps in the street, or do you create open... voids or courtyards from the street? How do you do that? How do you think about that as a street? These are buildings that don't make those kinds of gestures at the street. They're all about a forest of gestures. You can see up in the tops, they have to try to signify that they're different from the other towers. Towers have to do two things. They have to be good on the base and in the air. You know, there are two different responsibilities. This is not finished yet. I think it's more one-sided because there's more buildings on the west side than there is on the east side. So you don't really get that sense of a street. The street is a kind of balanced passage. In New York, as you well know, those streets, those buildings are right up, and they're fabulous. They make a kind of sense that you're in a place. You feel a little more intensity and motion when you're in those kinds of places. Here, it's kind of, it's not there yet, you know. It's diffused, yeah.
Even Spadina seems a little quieter in this section than normal because the gardener's closed.
Yeah.
It does have the connections to the gardener west on the west side of Spadina in this section, but it's pretty quiet.
So we're crossing Fort York to the south side.
There's not a lot of continuity in the width of the sidewalk.
No, it's all over the place, right? That's another measure, I think, of a good street, you know, is that it has continuity. And continuity is sort of something you can play with as a pedestrian. You know, you can wander off that, you can sort of challenge that continuity, but it's nice that if there's a, size matters, you know, if there's a nice scale to something, you get a sense you're actually going towards something.
Right.
We've seen the sidewalk go from like 6 meters down to 2 meters.
Right, and the truth is that happens as parcels redevelop,
sure.
And there's an opportunity for the city to implement a wider sidewalk length and to make sure they get enough property for it. So as we walk south on Spadina, there are certain sections that have been redeveloped and certain sections that haven't. And that's part of what gives you that patchwork feeling.
But let's look at something here. This, you know, a good city also knows how to coordinate something. See the view we have? We're looking at a kind of space between a tower and a low block building.
Big black public artwork.
And there's a big stair and
it's
a big raised courtyard, and there it is, looks like a ship, all that nautical water theme. But look at the you know, the lake shore, the signage for leaving the city is right in the way of it. You know, if you took that Lakeshore East Queen and shifted it, you know, to at least to the edge of the building further south, you wouldn't have that kind of visual mess. I mean, it might sound small, but I think it adds up. If you, whoever that artist was probably a little ticked off to kind of see that traffic came in and just, oh, how with you? I don't care about your sight line. I'm just going to put this thing up, you know? I mean, quality public space is a kind of considered idea about space. You can see these buildings, they're not really offering a space where you have to go up the stair and go to somewhere else, you know, which I sort of think is kind of not having faith in what the space of the street is, you know. You know, courtyards that come right off the street, so you can walk in there easily. There's an easy transition. But look at these things. They're I wouldn't call them safe. They're like a shielded space that you have to go in and through.
Right, and that's always, I think, for developers a struggle, creating a space that's part of the development, but then allowing it to be used as a public space. There's always a push and pull there. There's security issues and maintenance issues and all that kind of stuff. And here, there's some grading issues as well, because there's different things that happen with the landscape.
It's not really inviting a public.
But you can't see where you're going here. When you know, you have to take a certain amount of faith that you're going to get up there, into a space up there. Yeah. But this one, there's a big, big new park by Douglas Copeland. Do you know who he is? Canadian Renaissance man, apparently. He writes, he does plays, he can design buildings. There's nothing stopping him. He's done a park over here that has actually a big, 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 you know, warlike kind of canoe. You know, the native people had these big, big canoes. He has one that's all red, and it's an icon. It sticks out of the building on that, or sticks out of the park on that side. But I think we're going to see a little piece of it from here, if we're lucky. What I'm getting at is that the street should allow you to see things either off it or on it, you know, should...
Connectivity is important.
Yeah, visual connection.
Visual connectivity, and that's important for a pedestrian, because unless you know exactly where you're going, if you're a tourist or if you're new to the neighborhood, you need to make that connection before you actually walk it. This is an interesting piece that we're crossing here now. Oh, we're just north of the Gardiner, and we're just coming onto the linear park that the city is implementing all across the north side of the Gardiner. And this is where we first get our peek of the lake underneath the Gardiner. And so this is an interesting spot.
And there's a big sign in front of it that says wrong way.
Wrong way. That's interesting, because it's meant for the motorists, because it's a one-way ramp southbound. But as a pedestrian, that's what you see you're looking at the lake as
also,
well.
Also, the whole sidewalk comes to an abrupt halt. There ain't no going south on the sidewalk, so you got to make right, cross into traffic. Now all of a sudden you're in the middle. This has not worked yet. Look down there, you'll see a piece of the canoe up there in the new park there.
We're looking west, trying to see a piece of a canoe, but I don't see.
Well, you can see all the big stones. Let's cross over. But you can see the what he's trying to do is bring the park to the street.
Right, and the interesting thing is, as we're crossing, it's really tough to understand here how to get to the other side and to continue your walk on the linear park at this point. You really have to zigzag through.
Okay, so we're looking south at some street utilities, electricals, danger.
Big
signs.
Electrical boxes. You're looking at the support, concrete support for the expressway, and you barely squeeze to the left or the right of them. You know, I wouldn't say that's kind of planned, or even they should have some kind of protection where signage is.
Right.
And there's the park in the park, which we can't get to, because you can't walk across the raised
valleys. There's no pedestrian crossing. And here's the whole issue. Well, one of my issues with the Gardiner, and the Gardiner is a controversial piece of infrastructure in the city of Toronto. Some people want to keep it up, some people want to take it down. And I won't tell you how I feel about it, except to say that as a pedestrian walking south, and I've heard this before from people who live in the neighborhood, especially people who live on Queens Quay, and they want to connect, they have to come into the city under the Gardiner every day. The things that we talked about, the the boxes, electrical boxes that James mentioned, the sidewalk, you sort of have to veer on either side. Those are the kinds of things that aren't pedestrian friendly.
Yeah.
If you want,
some of these choices actually literally lengthen your journey.
Exactly.
Right? Even though it may be a slight amount.
Yeah. So that's something that I hear about often, and really you can't argue with it, because in this case there's the Gardner columns and the boxes, and the pedestrian connections are all over the place, and to cross from east to west isn't convenient.
No, and you can't
convenient.
Do it. I mean, at a certain point, that pathway you brought up, the asphalt pathway, which we can see on the east of this, you see the other pieces are over there, so you've got to cross 25 meters of sidewalk, a road there to get there. That's not a connection. That is the problem where the city has to say, well, this is not solved. There's not like a break that we stop in the park where we can actually make a connection there. The problem with this is that it's dangerous. It just sets up situations for people to kind of test those things.
And you really don't want to cross. I wouldn't want to cross here. And I guess...
I don't want to sound like a Priscilla Goodbody, that I'm really nervous about all these things and too delicate about that. But fine-grained things matter. They really do.
They do. And the important point there is that they come in pieces. You can only do so much at a time. So what pieces you do first matter as well.
Just some of the visual cues that are involved in this. It's quite complex because you've got
as you're crossing, as a pedestrian,
small changes of grade, right, and surface treatment, and you've got street paint fencing and all this stuff.
That's right. The visual cue, number one visual cue, is the railing on the other side, on the west side of the sidewalk. It kind of tells you don't cross here. There's no sign.
Broken sort of fencing.
Yeah, and it's not, you can get around it. It's not going to stop you from getting around it. But it's there to send you a clue. Don't cross here. Don't cross the tracks.
It's a barrier. It's not a friendly sign,
Yeah.
In Florence, just to mention that the Medici solved the problem like this, What they wanted to do was cross the city without walking on the streets. They created a kind of beautiful raised walkway. Okay, like it or not. It's beautiful. It's there now. It's classically done. But nobody's put their head to this problem seriously and said, how can we make this thing correct? How can we make it work? The traffic's working, buildings are working, but nobody's tackled this problem. This is what urban design should be doing. That's why it's so important in the city. Watch all these people walking. They don't obey the rules, They're walking crossing there. Cyclists do that. They're not supposed to obey the rules, but there's not a lot of choice. You're throwing in a really hostile environment. Pretty hostile, unfriendly. This is a nice day. Come here in December and January, snow and salt, and cars whipping up here because they've just come, they've just driven in from Mississauga. So these guys are all hardwired and, kind of riding for leather, so to speak. They're not about to slow down. So you get these two things encountering each other. Pedestrians, which are, beautiful, quiet, sort of, you know what I mean? There's the conflict.
And yet, all the negative things we've set up with the pedestrian connections, we've made it down here with no trouble, all the way down to the Gardner, and it's not pretty, and it maybe doesn't have the right feeling.
It's not glorious.
And it's not glorious, and the connections are sometimes, the visual cues aren't there, but the connections are there, and I think that's a start. And then it's filling in all the other holes, all the other pieces, as the city... Really, sometimes it's when the city gets an opportunity, they'll do it. Like I said before, when a site redevelops and they can take some land to create a wider boulevard and a wider sidewalk, then they do that. But before that, it's kind of difficult. You can't really knock down a building just for the sole purpose of, the building that's been there for 100 years, just for the sole purpose of
Here's
creating a wider
thing
sidewalk.
About this. There's a kind of corner tower right here between that and the expressway. And they have all glazed glass apartments with balconies looking to the south. I mean, the first couple of balconies seem all right, but when you get way up there, you wonder how anyone's going to stand on the balcony 35 stories up and, have dinner up there. They've got to be braver than I am. But is that just vanity on the part of the architect, or is it an idea?
Well, you know what? I think people like balconies. It doesn't matter how high up in the air you are and what kind of small condo you live in. The feeling that you can open a door and just dip your toes outside, is there's something to be said about that.
Some other control. I'd rather have the balcony embedded into the apartment.
Fair enough.
they do that on that side, though.
They do.
The other thing that, I mean, are these beautiful buildings? I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of gray painted concrete. At least that one is.
It's gorgeous. Like,
that's not beautiful.
Should we head south under the garden?
And around these utility boxes? So here we are under the gardener. Of course, it's, again, it's functional, or some people would argue it's not, but it's functional, and it does what it does, but as a pedestrian walking underneath it, you sort of want to just get through this piece as quickly as possible and get it over with. But most people, yeah, most people wouldn't do that.
Imagine how difficult it would be to treat this with landscaping.
Although that would be difficult because what would grow
with
no sunshine? So it's cold, it's very shady, there's not much here, it's very noisy, and that's what you've got to get through.
Skateboard park.
Yes.
You know, it's a big scene between one part of the city and the other. And, you know, it creates a disconnection. It's a break. It's a disconnect.
And yet, it serves such a huge purpose. It gets people in and out of the city. So that's why it's so controversial, because it's an important piece of infrastructure, and yet it's not ideal.
So what would an alternative be, then, if this were to be repurposed or dismantled?
There's been a number of things discussed, taking it down completely, making it into a pedestrian walkway on top, on the Gardner, and then a motorway underneath on the lakeshore. There's, you know, umpteen ideas. And we're crossing to the south, and finally we get back into the sunshine. And as I said before, as we approach the lake, this is the one part, the one street, that as you approach Queens Quay, you can actually get to the lake and you can see the water.
I see that. I mean, they talk about street furniture, lighting, all those things that really make up a street, give it a kind of character. And you look south, I mean, we're right on the sidewalk looking south, and there's like three lines of columns, hydro, small little bulb lighting standards, another type of light standard. It's so confusing, you know, you don't know what's going on here. It's redundant, you know, one thing has no sense of its relationship to another thing. Good design is also just stripping away all that stuff, making clean and simple, you know. The problem with the expressway, back to that, is the city's got to solve that on a bigger, bigger scale. You know, Spadina is just trying to get to the street, but it's encountering a huge east-west system that's carrying traffic and people. A good city knows how to solve those problems. You know, right now, there's a conflict for sure. But now we see the water.
On the left side of the block itself, they've got this landscaped area. I think these little miniature bollards, they're particularly young.
You know, I want to be nice and friendly. I really want to be generous. But
no, is that for skateboarders?
That's to stop skateboarders.
Yes, that's what I thought.
But is you know, there's another way of solving that, you know, is the edge of the concrete. You can just design something into that, so you don't. Yeah, we did it at Dundas Square, so it wasn't a nasty thing or trying to be mean-minded to anyone using the public space. But I think landscape sometimes is sort of working for the authorities. You know, it's sort of an apologist for safety and keeping people out, and you know.
And yet, this
looks
corner
benign
out
and
of
friendly.
The two, you know, the coffee time on the. Opposite side of the street. This is a beautiful corner in comparison. And it wasn't here for a long time. That coffee time has been there for a while. And so this is a space that I would actually sit in and maybe get my coffee and enjoy it here rather than inside.
But you can't sit here. There's no sitting. There's no way. All those
there's no seating, yeah.
Are not to sit. I just wonder about the scale of gesture, just to be honest with you. When a major street, city street ends, you know, how should it end? What scale? You know what I mean? The gestures, small gestures, big gestures, medium mm-hmm. scale gestures. This is a small little community gesture, which is completely out of whack with the whole idea of the street. I'm talking about a major triple line of trees or something that brings you to this point, which we've been working our ass off to get down here. You know, something then sets you up for this thing. A lot of great cities, European cities, you know what, Barcelona knows how to end the street at the water. This is not ending. This is just, you're on your own.
It's a little bit unceremonious.
Every man for themselves.
But maybe that's the beauty of it, because you see the lake, you see the boats. I just saw a plane just go down for landing at the airport, and it's a great view of the island from here.
But, you know, I don't want to be a contrarian, but there's Lakeshore. Queenski, excuse me, there. And now we've got here, but we're not here yet. You know, we got to now cross more streetcar lines to get to the water over there. It seems that somebody's setting us up for something, you know? Really.
Well, either that or it's part of the city.
But well, there's a pole right in the middle of our walkway.
There is. Actually,
there's another pole there.
Right.
Another,
right, so if you look south on the crosswalk, crossing Queens Quay, there's an electrical standard right in the middle of the crosswalk.
No, I mean, it is. That's the pattern. When you add all those things up all the way along, you realize nobody's really looking out for you. I mean, good city design is looking after those things. Again, I mean, I don't want to sound like the defender of order and organization, but sometimes you need that clear organization to allow people to safely move from one place to another. And
so can we talk a little bit about what's going on in the square that we're standing in, like just the details and the choices? This line of bollards here, the black bollards, is telling people something. The fence behind it,
they're lighting, right?
That's lighting, yeah.
I know a lot about small public spaces, and public spaces should be ones that link you from the outside to the inside. Those screens that echo that kind of low wall with the trees behind seem to be more like barriers than sort of something that's trying to be conducive to making a nice public space. See, they can control the movement from the corner into the small little public space. And we're saying to actually enjoy a public space, you have to be able to sit and you know, take a little measure of the place. You can't sit there. So
and even here where there's a bench level retaining wall that they've got the evergreens covering.
And the hedges are planted there, so you can't sit there. So there's something, it's not cynical, it's the authoritarian idea of not having people sit and wait there. And I don't think that's friendly at all. So it looks like a public space, but it's not, really. It's really not. I mean, not to be hard about it at all, but it's about people moving by, seeing a few trees, and then go somewhere else. Somebody's got a guilty conscience here. It's not good tonight.
Well, maybe we could continue over to that park over there.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like
that's the Toronto Music
space.
Garden, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I really am not a negative person. I love my city, you know. I really do. You know.
But you're objective about it.
They have these, now I'm looking south across Queens Quay, it's a red light so we're not crossing it. Okay, here we go. They've got this sort of boardwalk landscaping that is...
It's fairly new actually, it's only been done a couple years ago or something like that.
The wave deck, is what they call that?
I think that's what it's called.
Okay.
It creates a lookout point onto the water.
But you see what this does is really nice. It reconciles things that are moving east-west and things that are moving north-south. Spadina is a north-south street, and Queens Quay is an east-west street. So the wave deck organizes a step platform, which allows people moving this way to move through it, plus us, who've just crossed the street, can go up these things like a set of steps. You know, it's a resolution, it's a kind of resolved public space at the water's edge. And then there's a nice bench at the bottom of it.
It reads more as an east-west, of course, but
the step is,
yeah, but it all
also invites, I think, because it's stepped, you know that you have to be cautious about whatever's going on.
Yeah. Well, that's...
Don't walk into the water.
But they've resolved that nicely. You know, these steel bollards there are controlling this pathway here. So if you want to go on this side, you know that you're looking for people that are slowing down. This seems faster on this side for people and bikes moving by. So there's a logic to that makes some sense to me, you know.
Okay, so do you want to head up?
Well, let's look at the water first.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'll say one last thing, but I think the bench here is really quite beautiful because it runs the entire length of the wave deck. When you sit on it, you can sit facing south or you can sit facing north, which is kind of nice. The scale of it is not puny. It's not a little one bench, but it's a bench for a multiple idea. It's multiple, you know. And I think it makes some sense with the steps.
It's inviting, isn't it?
No, it's inviting, yeah. So, you know, you can sit and see where you came from. When you look down back there, you realize all that energy and all that kind of expenditure of mind to get here. And this is nicely built, I think. Nice and detailed.
Okay, so heading over towards the garden.
Waterfront trail. This is a wilderness garden. Like, this is the bathroom. Excuse me, Spadina Street's slip, and this was designed, it wasn't designed as much as it was trying to reinstate a sort of landscape that was here before we were. There you go.
Spadina wetlands.
And they wanted, actually, their sense that they wanted to make the entire waterfront like this, you know, go figure.
The birdhouse sculpture is interesting because it certainly does invite birds. You can hear them all.
This is supposed to be for pike habitat down there.
It does drown out the noise of Queen's Quay quite
a
bit.
You can feel when you get to the lower grade, it's much softer up there.
The idea here was that the water would flood in here and create like a marsh. And this would be a breeding habitat for, see, you can see there's an opening over there, for lake, pike, so forth. But the problem is that the scale of this is not big enough to do that. When you miniaturize these landscapes and expect them to perform like large biosystems, they don't. You can see the vegetation's taken over. So any of the water comes in here, it's not going to have any impact at all. I would call this a failed ecological response to kind of trying to naturalize the water's edge, because it doesn't work. And furthermore, you know, if you think of Lake Ontario, this in Toronto, we just occupy a little piece of it. And there are people in the... What's not Toronto on Lake Ontario is wilderness. The whole country is wilderness. You know, so we have a little bit of city and... I think this gesture... I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you like to have
This is a funny... A very funny landscape down here.
I wouldn't call it... Say if it's an anomaly. You know, you don't know what to do.
Yeah. As we stand here, you look around, you see the buildings, you see the the traffic light, the signal heads, you see the CN Tower. You know, I can hear an airplane. So we're in this little nature spot.
It's like a mini me.
In the middle of, yeah.
It's so small.
I'm surprised there aren't more beer cans here.
Well, you know, at night, I would have more issues.
Zeidler's Harbor City that was planned for the 60s out there?
Like the Venice?
Yeah, right.
The 70s, yeah.
It was more or less filling the whole harbor, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. No. I mean, there are sections over here.
Near the airport.
Yeah,
gonna where take
he was
over
actually
those, kind those
of creating a bit
islands.
Of a kind of Venice there. But he wasn't filling it in at the bay, because that would be disastrous. But what he was producing, I think suggesting, has some really nice merits. So he actually lived on the water. You know, he created all kinds of new neighborhoods for... It's like an archipelago of smaller islands.
Yeah.
Our islands were under... underutilized, to be honest. There's a few people living there, lucky few, that have cottages and houses, but for the most part, for Torontonians, this is vacation. This is when I was a kid here, that's where you went for holidays. And then that's Muskoka for the poor, you know.
Because it only takes how much? $4 to get across on the ferry?
There's
something? Three and change?
Ferry ride. The ferry ride's fabulous. That's a kind of Toronto thing, but it really lacks some amenities as far as I'm concerned. You know, now that I'm older and a kid, you know, you can do without, you know. But I think, culturally speaking, you have visitors from all over the world coming here. You want to give them some things, you know, some amenities. Should be a couple of hotels as you get off over there, I would think. Better restaurants. It's not there yet, but there's a resistance to that, because they sort of can't reconcile kind of, you know, a culture living on the water's edge with wilderness. We don't know how to combine the two, and that's why you're seeing this thing. This is not friendly to anything, you know, it wants to block out, ignore other things around. There's a formal little park over here on the other side of it there.
The music garden?
Yeah.
Should we walk over?
So walking west now. Through the trails.
This is called the Waterfront Children's Garden. I guess because it's a mini garden with little tiny walkways.
Then we arrive at a kind of
clearing.
Square, yeah,
almost
grass,
like a clearing.
Lawn.
Should we walk straight across? Right off the grass onto a walkway. I like this canopy of trees on a
this
hot summer's day.
This is actually quite nice here. This is a little, you can sort of see it's a lined grove of trees, planting, really generous. This is a Toronto architect, Baird Sampson. So they know how to make connections to one system, link it to another, and sort of see, even moving east-west, they know how to organize this through the space, but then make something. There's real art to do. This is a matured space. This is what you kind of expect, you know, this is the reward for coming down to Spadina and having something nice like this. Yeah, this is a nice little space. Nice paving. The trees are mature. You can see where you're going, you got a sense of the path ahead of you.
So as we're walking west, is this now the music garden?
No.
No?
It's further west.
Well, we're around the hour mark, so it's up to you guys where you'd like to conclude. Wow.
Wow.
This is it, yeah. This is part of it, I think, yeah.
This is the beginning of
yeah,
the...
Yeah.
This little pavilion on like the sort of open pavilion.
Yeah. It might be a nice place to finish things off, sit down on a bench and rest after our long walk down Spadina. Have a quiet moment.
Sounds all right. Should we end? Do you want to stop it there?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think okay. This is a brilliant place to stop. It's really a nice park, lots of places to walk, pathways, that link you all the way around through. It's nice. Open, structured.
Mm-hmm. And lilacs.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Thanks very much, guys.